Blog Talk Radio.
It's a sports revolution.
Welcome to the war room. We got Dez, Kim, Jimmy, PJ, B. Austin, the hot block commander.
How you wanna end a 1 or 2 hour show to keep the brain running with the premise of talk sports on a national level? Roll with the topic, sorta like the rubber. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five during prime time. Sports conglomerates speak their minds a little bit. For sports medicine, sports veterans and greats. To 4 for 26, so the war in Kuwait. It's the war room with five knights at the round table. Five Philly guys, diversified and educated.
What's up, good people? It's week 4 in the month of October, and it's time to talk. You are once again live in the War Room, brought to you by War Room Sports. I'm Devin McMillan, and I'm at the round table with the four most diversified and educated Philly guys on the planet: Jimmy Williams, B. Austin, Kill Bayon, and Paul Johnson. We got a great show for you tonight. We'll preview the NBA season, but before we do, we'll talk with Chaz Dudley, CEO and coach of the Beltway Bombers of the Atlantic Coast Professional Basketball League. And in hour number 2, we'll be talking to New York Knicks guard Ronnie Brewer about the upcoming NBA season. Join us in the JW Philly Realty chat room right now so you can get in on these conversations at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom or join us on Facebook or Twitter at War Room Sports. You can also call in directly when we open up the Digital Extreme Tech Hotline 30 minutes from now at 323-410-0012. But before we get started, we want to let you know who we listen to when we're not behind the mic. Make sure you check out Roy and Chris on the Broad Street Line every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. Also, check out Brandon, Chris, and Daniel Sports Track Radio every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on ueradiolive.com. But don't worry, if you can't catch them live, you can hear these great shows as well as all of our other great partner shows at warroomsports.blogspot.com. Finally, don't forget to catch us in syndication 3 times on Friday at newviberadio.com. That's NU. VIBE radio.com, and we're on 7 a.m., 1 p.m., and 7 p.m. Eastern Time. We'll have another big announcement for you in the coming weeks, but right now, let's go to Jimmy for those birthdays.
My birthday! Yay!
What's up, gentlemen?
Yo, yo. Hey.
What's up, good brother?
God bless us all.
Can't complain, you know. It's time to go ham you all Jackson and everybody, but anyway. Let's jump into these birthdays this week. And for those that don't know, our birthdays are brought to you by DirecTV. If you'd like a better TV experience than cable has to offer, that's including the NFL Sunday Ticket, go right to our website, which is warroomsports.com, click on the DirecTV logo, and order a better TV experience at a discounted rate that's courtesy of War Room Sports. Everybody likes a hookup, so go to warroomsports.com and get you a hookup. At any rate, the first birthday I want to talk about this week is one J.A. Adande, who turns 42.
It's my birthday! Yay!
Dev, when I say J.A. Adande, what comes to mind?
J.A. Catch J.A. a lot on Around the Horn. You know, of course, he's an ESPN personality and writer for the Los Angeles Times. I like J.A.'s work. I can't say that he's somebody I sought out, you know, to read stuff, but when I come across something that he's written, he's usually pretty good. Kind of a corny dude, you know, he tries to crack a lot of jokes on TV, and, you know, it kind of doesn't work. But, you know, J.A.'s cool with me.
Is that his shtick, or you think he's really corny dude?
I don't know. I think everybody try to bring out the big guns once they get their camera in front of them. So,
got you.
Might be his TV personality.
J.A. Adande, ESPN personality from Around the Horn or PTI. He even wrote for Washington and Washington, D.C. for D.C. newspapers. He teaches a class at USC, University of Southern California, titled Sports Commentary, and he co-teaches a class called Sports Public Relations. But other than that, you know, he's cool.
All right. Cool.
Okay, that was kind of Adande-ish.
I don't know what to say. I mean, he's cool. He's nondescript, doesn't do much, doesn't say much, always intelligent, you know. I don't know. He's J.A. Donde. Go watch him. No, watch us.
Yeah, I mean, you know, shout out to Jay at Donde. You know what I mean? He doesn't use the N-word on TV. But anyway, shout out to him, though. So let's move on to the next birthday. And that birthday will be one Patrick Travis Swilling, a.k.a. Pat Swilling, who turns 48. Doc Bader,
my birthday! Yay!
Yeah, Pat Swilling, he was a beast of a linebacker. He was a part of that that linebacking core, one of the original 3-4s. It was him, Sam Mills, Ricky Jackson.
Jackson, and
I forgot who the other dude was. But Pat Swilling was a beast. He's 5-time Pro Bowler, 2-time All-Pro, and he's an NFL Hall of Fame. A pretty diverse gentleman who served one term in the Louisiana State House of Representatives. He looks to become a sheriff in Orleans Parish, and he does a little bit of real estate development. And his son, Pat Swilling Jr., had a full scholarship to play basketball at St. Joseph University, but he left the university in 2011 after being suspended from the team. Who knows what that was? We can all speculate. But now he's playing at Tulsa.
Yo, kid don't believe nothing for us to say, y'all. Dad, what you got to say?
I'm going to go ahead and pass on Pat Swilling because there's nothing left.
Hey, yeah, more or less. Austin, you got anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think the Bull, I mean, I feel sorry for him because he was a part of a losing organization. And the one thing that always stood out about him with me is no one has more playoff losses than Duke.
Damn. I didn't even know they counted that for linebackers.
I
thought they only gave wins and losses to quarterbacks. I've never heard anybody talk about a linebacker losing playoff games.
Hey, man, that core affected games.
You know what's funny about Pat Swilling, and I'll just say this because Kill basically gave us his biography. I think of Pat Swilling, though. I think of the Saints, and the Saints, you know, how they were constructed as we were coming up. They were a horrible team. And it's funny, when I talk sports with some of the younger generation, they know the Saints, the Drew Brees Saints, so to speak.
Right.
And they don't realize just how bad. They don't remember, like, the bags over the head. And people
but the crazy thing, when they were even then in that era, you know, they had a great linebacking core and they had a pretty good running back and Dalton Hilliard, but everything else around these guys. And you know, I said pretty good. I didn't say he was great. He's pretty good. I think pretty good is under good.
He was high. Anyway.
Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Like
better than good.
Good.
It's pretty good. Oh, so pretty good is lower than good. You know,
I think. Yeah. I think pretty good is like. It depends on your tone when you say it. Like, oh, come on, man, he was pretty good. That's probably, like, better than good. But if I say, man, he was pretty good, that's, like, almost
that's
good.
That's probably a little below good.
It depends on the tone, man. So
got you. Okay.
Audience, that's been your grammar and tone lesson of the day.
Hey, you know what? I have to correct myself. I said he was in the Hall of Fame. He's in the College Football Hall of Fame. Not the
NFL.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, I thought you had said, like, the Hall of Fame, like, said something. I didn't know you meant he was in it.
I knew he was tripping.
So, like, maybe the Hall of Fame gave him an award for, like, you know, the best last name or something.
That was my point. My point is, like, you know, there's nothing really to say about him other than to think about just how bad that organization was in years past.
He called the Aints, and they wore bags over their heads.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I just said. A lot of people don't know about that. They know the Drew Brees thing. Anyway, let's move on, man. The next one I want to bring up is one Robert Montgomery Knight, also known as Bob or Bobby Knight.
It's my birthday!
72.
Yay!
Be often, Bobby Knight. When I say Bobby Knight, his name will come to mind.
Yo, Bobby Knight was such a tremendous basketball mind and a tremendous coach. I mean, you have to say that when you look in the win-loss column. When you look at his effect upon the game, you know, even in talking to a lot of his ex-players, but, you know, just watching his antics and the way he interacted with people throughout the years, I probably couldn't have played for Duke. And I've always been taught to respect your elders. God bless mom and dad. They were older parents, so, you know, I came up with a different influence. So you know, I'm all for the straight line, straight lace with young people relating to older folks. But, you know, Bob Knight would get up and spit on you and when he's talking. and push you and punch you in your chest. It didn't seem like basketball was fun for his players.
Couldn't have been.
Yeah, like it didn't seem like they had fun.
Yeah, when I think of Bobby Knight, like, I mean, yeah, besides, like you said, of him being such a great basketball mind, I just think of like, an ornery old bastard, you know what I mean? That's, as, like, why, dude, you're always angry. Even when he's on television doing the analyst thing, he always seemed angry. So
Could your son play for Bobby Knight?
He's an ornery dude. Because I had to travel up to the school, and then, you know what I mean, we got to move some furniture or something. Like, come on, Bobby.
Like, I mean, some of these kids need that, you know what I mean? But That's true.
Well, but at the same time, it was rare for Bobby Knight to go into the into the neighborhoods where the kids quote unquote needed that though. I mean, because you know, of all the
basketball
players you hear of, when Bobby Knight does go into those neighborhoods, everybody who speaks in those documentaries seems so surprised. Like even in the Benji documentary, like we had Bobby Knight. In Chi-Town,
suburban,
you know what I'm saying? Like they were.
He got Zeke too, man. He got Zeke.
Yeah, but Zeke, he didn't have to go into the hood to get Zeke. He went to Zeke's school, which was in the burbs.
Yeah.
Remember, Zeke didn't play in the public league. He trained out to what's the name every day? St. Joe's, was it?
Zeke, yeah.
Yeah.
Zeke was out in the suburbs. And
yeah, he was out in the burbs.
Bob's
remember, Jimmy the Bull went there. What's his name? Not Arthur. Hey, William Gates went there.
Oh, yeah, William Gates.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
And he went to, like, a Catholic school or something like that.
Yes, sir. And that's from the movie Hoop Dreams. For those who know what we're talking about, we
Hoop
love Dream. The movie Hoop Dreams. Anyway,
know about Hoop Dreams, you don't know about
that. Shout out to Bobby Knight, though. Doctor, you got anything you want to say about Bobby Knight?
No, that he had the last undefeated season in college basketball. And, you know, he was just crazy. I don't think I would have been able to play for him. I have no problem playing for tough coaches and hard-nosed coaches, but the way he used to grab his players and, you know, just embarrass them and put his hands on them, that was just kind of – that was just really out of line. So,
if he was a black coach –
Tonight,
if he was black.
Yeah, another thing about him, y'all notice anytime he gets a chance, he always comes at John Calipari's neck talking about how John Calipari keeps leaving schools on probation and nothing happens to him and he keeps getting hired.
Yeah. Plus, when I think of Bob Knight, I think of the mean sweater game. His sweater game was like that. He couldn't mess with
him. Better than Trestles.
He couldn't mess with Dr. Huxtable, but, you know, he had a nice little sweater game. And I think of Keith Smart making that shot. You know, because probably was scared not to make that shot.
yeah, they played Syracuse out. That was crazy.
Let's move on from Coach Knight. The last birthday, rest in peace, shout out. And shout out to the Redskins fans out there, as delusional as you are. this is for Jack Kent Cook, who passed away in April of 97. April? Hero? He passed away in April of 97, but he was born on October 25th. Of
1912. Born 100 years ago.
1912.
Yay.
I think of Jack Kent Cook, I think of an old man. I'm sorry, go ahead, Dad.
Jack Kent Cook, that's crazy. See, he died in 97, and, you know, it was still 5 years before he died since Washington won their last Super Bowl, even though, you know, you get... No. I'm saying, you know, even though when you get into a discussion with any Washington fan, of course, they talk like they won it yesterday afternoon. But, you know, Jack Kent Cook did a lot for the city. You know, he actually built the stadium that they're in now. It used to be called Jack Kent Cook Stadium. He used to own the Lakers, too, back in the day. He built the Forum as well.
Sold the
Dr. Bus.
Yeah.
He's originally from Canada or something like that, so... He came down to the U.S. and you know, lived the American dream, quote unquote.
I have nothing at all to say about Jack Kent Cook, other than you bring up a good point. And this is to any fan of any team. When your team has like a different owner, and it's been more than a decade that's passed, you can't brag about a championship.
Statute of limitations, man.
The statute is like 5 years. Now, we being the upstanding gentlemen that we are, I mean, we don't even talk about the Phillies championship. Like, we let it go after two.
So you got to give more than five years.
All of the trash talk that Nationals fans, you know, came up with this year, I did not once mention that the Philadelphia Phillies won the championship in 2008.
I mean, we hold ourselves to a higher standard here at the War Room, and somebody will probably call me on that one day because I've been recorded saying that, but it's real talk. I get so
corny. And the thing is, Austin, we have a right because the core of that championship team is still there. So we have a right.
Well, who won the Super Bowl 5 years ago? Who won the Super Bowl 5 years ago?
I can't remember.
Who cares, man?
Who won the Super Bowl five years ago.
I can tell you who won it 20 years ago, though.
Yeah. You got to remember the first 5 years.
Jack Kent Cook reminds me of a dude that has a lot of oil wells and has, like, cattle.
Gerald Jones.
Yo, Jack Kent Cook, people don't notice, but he actually he owned a soccer team, the LA Wolves. He owned he owned thoroughbred horses.
He go kill in his
bed. And he was married five times, twice to the same woman, but his first marriage was 45 years, and then his next marriage was 10 months, then his next marriage was 73 days. And then he married a drug runner. He married a former drug runner from Bolivia named Marlene Ramalho Chalmers.
Folks, I want
Mario
to know he really is a doctor, yo.
Yo, Doc Bailey's name is Killipedia. But no, the thing is, he went through a long marriage, then he started yam farming. But why are we talking this long about Jack Kent Cook? Let's move along, man. Dev, do me a favor. Tell everybody what happened this past week while they were on the grinder, brother.
Jack Kent Cook ain't even alive, and we just spent like 20 minutes on the dude.
And we hate this man.
That's a waste of Jack Kent Cook.
While y'all on the grind, it's brought to you by Bay Financial Services. Go to our website, warroomsports.com. Click on the logo for Bay Financial Services and get your money right. All right, fellas, did you hear? Even though we're still in lockout status right now, some moves are being made in hockey. Now, the people of Nassau County and Long Island have voted against the $400 million arena project for the New York Islanders. Their contract at the Nassau Coliseum is up in 2015, so they're gonna bounce. They're going to go to Brooklyn and share the Barclays Center with the Brooklyn Nets. So, it's like, you know, Brooklyn's on fire right now, man. They went from nothing to, you know, they're about to have two teams, you know, generate some good revenue for the area, you know, the Barclays Center. So, you know, shout out to Brooklyn. Where Brooklyn at? I know they're in here somewhere. They're always in here.
But, absolutely.
Yeah, but get that.
That's a waste of time.
Kill, you heard your boy, Lance Armstrong. He was finally, like, officially stripped of all 7 of his Tour de France wins because of the witch hunt. And he stepped down as the head of Livestrong. So, I mean, Lance's legacy is shot right now.
That's crazy. And I heard that there may be a suit where people that donated money to Livestrong may file suit to get some of their money back since he's supposed to be a fraud. Now, I doubt if that gets any legs, but those are rumors. And also,
if those rumors are true, I don't even understand why people would think that way. It doesn't matter what he actually did in bicycle racing. He raised over $500 million for a deadly disease such as cancer. So why would you take your money back because of what he's doing? I mean, if you can look into it and find out that the money went into the right place, then you should be happy that you did something for the cause. Like, it's not about Lance
Armstrong. They mad because he gave himself cancer by using steroids. But anyway, I was actually going to write a blog about this, but I'm just going to speak on it real quick. In reference to the whole witch hunt and the whole Lance Armstrong thing, like, you know, it's kind of crazy to me, specifically with Nike dropping him as, like, you know, as a sponsor and backing, considering they still sponsor A-Rod, who admitted to it.
Yeah,
I know. At least Lance lying. Yeah.
Lance keep a good lie. Yo, A-Rod admitted to it.
Maybe again, like baseball, I'm uninformed, and you know. know, I am concerned about the integrity of the game. But I still, like, kind of like Lance. And I don't like Lance,
man. I don't care about no bicycle racing. Like, God.
I don't care about the bicycle racing. I don't care about the steroids. I just like Lance Armstrong.
Austin just like them little yellow bracelets.
Yo,
I have one on right
Armstrong
now.
Fan, and I've never
I'm wearing one
bike
right
race
now
in my life.
And I'm upset because when my son breaks this one, I'm not going to be able to get another one because Nike dropped them. So I hope they're having like a clearance sale of Livestrong bracelets, and maybe I can get some for like 25 cents instead of a dollar.
No, we're going to get some Warren bracelets made. FOH to Livestrong.
That's true, too. And we ain't giving them out free. Y'all going to pay a dollar. If y'all pay a dollar, it's for a cause.
Now, I have a question.
We figure out what
question
that is. But
what's going
to
happen to
your ignorance?
Hey, real quick, I have a question. Since they took away seven of them, so who comes in second? Or is second tainted, so now they go to third? Or if the third place person is tainted, they go to fourth?
Chill. I think by virtue of how many people cheat in that sport, I think I have four Tour de France wins on my record.
Yo, you do. Listen.
I ride the exercise bike
They talked about this like 2 months ago when this first popped up, and they said that if they strip Lance, the next two to four people in line are all also drug addicts.
Hey, that's what I'm saying. I got a couple. I'm going to see if I'm going to call and get my trophy.
So I have another question.
And we
so
put it on our Facebook
place,
and our Instagram.
So let's say the fifth or sixth place winner becomes a champion now. Now, can they put that on their resume retroactively when they apply for jobs and things like that?
What does it even matter? Like, no one cares. Why are we even talking about
it's
the show?
It's a shame that they could put that they were
coach
a Tour de France winner and they still got to apply for a job.
No, well, they could be a trainer and they could be like, look, I won three of the last seven Tour de France's.
And they're going to say, FOH, let's move on. Gilbert Arenas is very, very, very close to signing with a team over in China, just like Tracy McGrady did last week, just like Stephon Marbury's been doing for the last 3 years. Fellas, is Gilbert Arenas' NBA career over?
Has it been over? It's funny because I know this is one of Austin's favorite players, so I kind of laugh when I see this because Austin hasn't given up on him yet.
Dude is a career 20-point scorer, second-round pick. You know what I'm saying? He averaged 29 one year. Like, this is one of those examples of – see, I'm sitting here. I'm about to put it on his knee injuries, but is it
more
of what –
I'm putting it on that contract. Once he got paid.
Yeah, but is it more of what Gilbert did to himself? Like, because he's not viewed favorably around, NBA management circles.
Nah.
But the dude got to still
be
able to play.
Ready to say, because this is his famous words, once he got paid, he this or he, yo.
He,
nah, he
got
once
hurt.
He got
once
paid,
he
didn't do anything but get injured repeatedly.
Mm-hmm.
And then
so
the
it's
is
not
there.
Like the production level.
Gilbert's not the kind of dude. I don't think he knows how to slack off. Like,
yeah, he doesn't. He's retarded. No,
you know what it is, though?
Easy to
I think
say.
He
that's
did,
easy to
he,
say.
I think that might have been his downfall, Jimmy, though. He didn't know how to slack off. Like, his knees hurt. He can't run anymore. But he still thinks he can come in and shoot 25 times a game.
No,
he doesn't know how to slack off.
Think about the two times that he came back there. First, he came back too early. And he still was putting up over 20 and couldn't walk. And they had to shut him down. He had a second surgery. Then he came back again, still gunning, and had to have a third surgery. So, dude, it ain't desire. He wasn't one of those dudes that got paid and was like, I'm cool. He just ain't bright.
I mean, okay, we can say that. I don't know what the answer is. I'm just saying, because the thing about it is, we don't know what kind of work he put in, like, you know, to get to that.
Yeah,
remember, he
kill,
had a chip
kill
on his shoulder.
Kill.
No, I understand what you're getting ready to say, Austin, but you didn't let me finish saying what I was going to say. What I'm
all right,
saying
go ahead
is,
and finish, because I watched the boy.
Okay, you did watch him, but did you watch him after he got paid?
Yes, after he got paid, yes.
Okay, after he got paid, you watched him do what?
Yeah, I
didn't
watched
watch him after
go
he got
into
paid
the
because
Verizon
he was,
Center and work out
sitting
at midnight because the dude didn't have a life. Yo, Bo wasn't into girls. He wasn't into parties. He was a new.
No, I get all that, but this is before he got started getting hurt.
No, Jimmy, this is after. We're not talking about before the injury. Before the injury, he was doing that too. But even after, dude had nothing but basketball.
Yeah.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is after he got paid, he was hurt. He couldn't work out.
Nah, what happened? Even to the point, even after, before and after he got paid, he always worked out at night while everybody else partied. But what happened was, when he had his first knee injury, he was working out too hard. Yeah, like I think that was after. Yeah, that was after they paid him.
I wasn't sure if he was hurt already.
Yeah, he was working out too hard that they had to tell him to slow down because when he came back, he messed up his knee because he was going ahead of their timeline, just working out harder with his lifting and his shooting. Then he came back, boom, then he got hurt again. They're like, all right, we're going to just sit you out for the whole year this time. So, yeah, no, his work ethic has never been questioned. I don't know about right now at this moment, but his work ethic, ever since he's been in D.C. at least, was, like, through the roof.
I never thought he was that good to begin with, so this is a non-issue to me.
Yeah, no,
and he was clutch. Hold on. He was clutch, 6'4", played the 1, played the 2. His best year, he put up 29-4-6. All right, who would y'all rather have in their prime, Arenas or Iguodala in their prime?
I thought he was good. I thought he was I mean, he has to be good because he's an overachiever. You know what I'm saying? He came. Yeah. He was a second-round draft pick. You know, not a lot of second-round draft picks come in and end up getting $100 million contracts.
Yo, you know why Jimmy?
He did
explain why Jimmy's mad. Yo, he saw.
I'm not mad. No.
4 points.
He's a gun.
That 64 points that Gilbert hung on Smush.
I'm the total opposite of you. When it comes to players that you like guys that gun. I don't like guys that gun. And he literally carried a gun.
You like guys that pass. You like Kevin Ollie.
I still think, to a certain extent, whether or not you like guys that gun, I don't think you can not call him, you know, say that he's not good just because
he's
a gun.
Well, I think that good. I said, take the context of how I said it.
It's one of those context things.
I don't think he's a hundred million dollar good.
But who is? Like, so many people are overpaid.
Who is?
We could go down a list of guys that I like, and I would say, nope, he shouldn't have got paid. He shouldn't have. We got to move on, y'all.
LaVoy McConnell says Gil's demise happened after his gun issues. Do you mean gunning on the court or literally the gun?
No, in the locker room. That whole locker room thing. When Adidas dropped him, then he got suspended for the year.
Yo,
I mean,
something
that's
worse than
stuff.
The gun. Y'all know that the Bull pooped. Yo, he put poop in Andre Blatch's shoe, and Andre Blatch didn't do nothing.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely has some problems, like, mentally. But.
And plus, after that picture that came out of him, Austin, I don't see how you still can support him.
But how can you support Magic after he kisses men?
Magic, the Hall of Fame player, Gilbert Nutt.
Magic, that's not all right, look, tongue is down Isaiah.
Yo, there have been rumors floating around all day that Emmanuel Stewart had passed away. And you know how I am, you know, because at first, when I checked on the story, the rumors had started last night, and they were actually rebuked, said he was still alive. I'm hearing again now that they've confirmed that he is dead. I also heard it from Jimmy said that TMZ is reporting it. So, you know, in my opinion, once TMZ reported, it's a wrap. So if it is indeed true and Emmanuel Stewart has passed, you know, we just want to send a rest in peace shout out to that brother, because as much as we clown him and his quote-unquote haircut or lack thereof, you know, we still recognize that he's a great trainer. You know, he's a Hall of Fame trainer, legendary trainer. It's subjective what you may think about his skills as an analyst on the HBO panel. But we just want to send a rest in peace shout out to Emmanuel Stewart.
Yo, absolutely.
We're going to move on because I see we got our guest on the line. So, you know, we got to pay some bills and get that out the way real quick. But I just want to ask you guys real quick about the, I know you heard about the NBA and the new All-Star ballot where they've taken off the designation of center. So now you vote for two guards. Well, you always voted for two guards, but now you vote for two guards and just three front court players, no center. You guys have a problem with that?
Absolutely.
Not it. I don't.
Wow. Okay. So
you got a problem with it, Austin. What's your problem?
Man, because it's bending to the whim of mediocrity. Like, get these big men together, Stop allowing Tyson Chandler to have no moves. Stop allowing Dwight to have no moves. You know? Get your butt
I understand. I feel you. I definitely feel you. I don't really – I don't care as much as a lot of other people because I see people arguing about it. But
yeah.
I can see both sides of it because you're saying it's kind of, you know, you said the thing about mediocrity. But on the other hand, people like Jamal McGlure make the All-Star team because – under the designation of center, there aren't, you know, sometimes there aren't a lot of names. Yeah,
I have a whole different way of looking at it, gentlemen.
Offended for 10 years that Jamal McGlure made the All-Star game. And
I bring that up at least twice a year.
I have a whole different way of looking at this, though. Hold on one second, Austin. I have a whole different way of looking at this. It's like, I think the game is evolving. The game is changing to where I don't know if we'll ever get back to having the traditional center. Because even if you look at the best center in the league, who's Dwight Howard, in a lot of people's opinion, he doesn't have necessarily a back-to-the-basket game. He plays, you know, the pick-and-roll game, so to speak. He's more athletic. I think the game is evolving. I think the entire game of basketball is evolving. That's something maybe we can ask Coach when we bring him on, but I think the game is changing. So I don't really have a problem with it. When I first heard it, I felt the same way Austin did, but as I thought about it, I said, you know what? The game of basketball is evolving. So it's not a bad idea.
Hey, as for Buster's, Jimmy's point, real quick, you had a year in 2010 where Chris Kaman averaged 19-9, and he was an all-star, but Zach Randolph was in Memphis averaging 21-12, and he didn't make it as an all-star. So on that alone, I agree with the move.
Zach didn't make it because Zach has something in the trunk of the car.
Yeah, I mean, some people, of course, you know, it's a subjective thing, so a lot of people – don't vote for people for other reasons outside of basketball.
And you know what? I correct myself. Zach did make it that year.
He made it
my
once.
Bad.
Yeah, he made it
yeah,
once.
He made
but,
it.
You know.
They both made it.
Yeah. Go ahead and Bill, so we can bring our guests on.
All right, so yeah, let's pay these bills real quick so we can get Coach Chaz Dudley on the line. Y'all know the drill. Check out our website at warroomsports.com. While you're there, be sure to sign up for the War Report. That's our weekly newsletter. Click on the Contact Us tab to send a message to us about our company, our show, or to inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. For general inquiries, email us at warroomsports.com. While you're browsing the site, click on the Memorabilia tab to buy cool War Room Sports merchandise, including the the bands that Jimmy just invented 10 minutes ago. We'll get that up as soon as possible. You can click the blog tab to read our latest sports articles and All's Fair in Sports and War blog, and click the respective icons to like our Facebook page, to follow us on Twitter, to subscribe to our iTunes podcast, and to download our free War Room Sports mobile app on your Android and Apple devices. You can also watch our videos at warroomsportstv.com. Join the JW Philly Realty chat room right now during the show at blogtalkradio.com/The War Room. To get into the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't want to create an account, you can sign in through your Facebook or Twitter accounts. And while you're at it, click follow to make The War Room one of your favorite Blog Talk Radio shows and get updates and reminders about the show every week. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room every week during the show. To call in and speak with us, dial the Digital Extreme Tech hotline at 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. Pressing 1 is like raising your hand, so go ahead and raise your hand, and one of the professors might just call on you. Jimbo.
That's right. Let's jump right to our guests. For those who don't know, I'd like to introduce Chaz Dudley, who's our first guest. He is the CEO, GM, and coach of the defending champion Beltway Bombers of the Atlantic Coast Professional Basketball League. So I'd like to welcome Coach Chaz into the War Room.
Coach, you're on the line. Can you hear us?
I can hear you. How you doing, fellas?
How are you?
Good. How are you?
What's up,
good,
Coach?
Good. I'm doing great.
All right.
Good.
Welcome
good.
To the War Room. We're glad you decided to join us this evening.
I appreciate being invited. Thank you again.
Absolutely. Coach Chaz, this is V. Austin. Tell us a little bit about the history of the Beltway Bombers and how the organization came about.
Well, we are in our 19th year, and for the last 4 years, we've been in the D.C. metro area. 15 years prior, I was in New York City, so I'm a New York City guy. So I just relocated here just about 4 or 5 years ago, and when I was in New York, the team was called Chaz Hoops New York City. And when I relocated here, we just kind of acclimated to the area, renamed the team the Beltway Bombers, and then we began playing in our pro league. So I've been doing this now close to two decades, coaching at this pro level after playing. And I love doing it. It's my way of giving back and helping my players, and obviously I have that passion of winning. So the history of it has been since New York for the last 15 years and the last four in the D.C. metro area.
Okay, okay. Coach, this is Devin. We spoke a little bit earlier through email, but we were, you know, reading up on you, and you have a pretty impressive coaching resume with over, you know, 45 championships and 600-plus wins across many leagues, including this one. But we'd like to know a little bit about your resume as a player because, you know, you just mentioned that you started coaching after playing.
Right.
So what are some of the highlights of your playing and coaching career, for that matter?
Well, I'm a New York guy. I grew up in the Bronx and attended St. Raymond's High School, which I would say about 3 to 4 years prior to attending, it started to build that reputation of being a force in the basketball league, the Catholic High School Association. So by my junior and senior year, we had a real prominent team and making noise and getting to the States. And then I went to played 3 years at Baruch College in New York, and then I was fortunate enough to have played overseas for several years. So I've had that experience of playing over the water. And then while I was still playing, it kind of morphed into coaching. So I enjoyed that aspect of it and just been coaching now for 19 years. And so, you know, my playing background is that I love to attack. I love playing with passion, you know, mixing attacking the rim and shooting. And then I just kind of study the game and the history of the game. Growing up in New York, there's so much talent out there. So you're battling tournament and game after game in high school and college against some of the most elite talent in the area. And it just kind of translated into coaching, and I love that aspect of coaching. Now I'm really into it. I'm in the lab constantly finding new ways to execute and take advantage of mismatches. So from playing to now coaching, I love the game, so it's a beautiful thing.
No doubt.
Okay. How you doing, Coach? This is Jimmy. Thanks. I'm glad we have you on.
Appreciate it.
And I have a question outside of basketball, because we all know that the Bombers are the reigning – they're the reigning champs of the Atlantic Coast Professional Basketball League. But my question is, besides your winning ways, what impact has your organization had on the DMV basketball scene and the surrounding community?
Well, it's very important to us that we lend our name, lend our support to the surrounding communities. So we've had three different home gym venues. It started out in Dumfries, Virginia, and then last year, we played at the College of Southern Maryland, and half of our games were at Riverdale Baptist in Upper Marlboro. So whenever we're in the community, we lend ourselves to as many causes, charities, and community involvements as we have. We also have a dance team called the Bomb Squad Dancers, which are comprised of ex-Redskins, Ravens, and Wizards cheerleaders, as well as D1 college cheerleaders who are now professional dancers. So they go out into the community as well to various charities and causes ranging from nursing homes to diabetes walks, Alzheimer's walks. Our players go into various schools to talk about bullying and the dangers of energy drinks and things of that nature. So along with playing and winning, we also want to lend our support and name to the community. And what's important to me this year is helping kids make that transition from high school to college, and then these guys who are in college, to let them know the steps that you need to take if that's your aspiration to go to the next level, that it's not just talent. Talent's only a portion of it. So we do whatever we can to constantly find causes along a wide assorted variety of different entities that we can lend our name to and give back to the community as well.
Sounds good. Wow. Absolutely.
Okay, okay. Coach, this is Akil, and
yeah.
We appreciate having a basketball diehard on the show. And I have a question for you. Let's talk a little bit about the team. What are the strengths of the defending ACPBL champs, and is this team strong enough to make a run at a repeat?
The first part of your question is the strength is unselfish talent. Nothing is more common at the pro level than talent that doesn't win. Okay, and unfortunately, I would say the generation now is so focused on being a man and the getting mine mindset that winning becomes secondary. If they can do that and win, great. But many times they want to be the man and not win. I've been fortunate that I've been very meticulous and very careful to put together a group of guys for many years that sole focus is winning. So if you put together a team of unselfish talent who play with bad intentions, whose sole agenda is winning, with high basketball IQ, who doesn't care who gets the glory, you're going to win significantly more than you lose. It just so happens that the guys that we have are really talented. So they kind of accept the fact that they may have to defer a little bit of their star power for the sole cause of winning. And no matter how you want to cut it, I'm a firm believer that players at any level really want to be coached, really want to be challenged, and want to be put in a situation to win. And we've done that. So you have some of the best players now in that DMV area, along with players coming from my hometown of New York and as far down as North Carolina, who could probably be the go-to man on another team, but would rather be a real good player on a championship team. And I learned that lesson back in New York, where at one point I was playing out in the Rucker in West 4th Street, and we were loaded. I mean, we had a monster crew. And we got to the Final Four and lost to a team that on paper we should have smacked. And I remember leaving off the court, and I ran into an old head, and he pulled me to the side and said, when you realize that you have to put together a team whose sole agenda is winning and to sacrifice, you'll win more. So get rid of some of these guys who want to be the man and get some role players who's going to help you win chips. And that was maybe year 17, you know, when I first started. And for the last 17 of my 19 years, we accumulated 45 chips with that same philosophy. So we have guys on our team, and we have some major star power. I mean, we have probably, in my opinion, the most talented player in the country that should be in the league, and you, baby Shaq Jones. Okay, and but we have Rogers Barnes and Cavell Johnson and Steve Miles, and the list goes on and on. Evan Martin. I mean, we have a long laundry list of special talent that decided to play with me, along with Coach Mack and Coach Antoine and Coach Larry Douglas, and together we have taken this talent, and the sole agenda is winning. So that's why we win. Okay, now, what are our chances of repeating? My attitude and what I constantly drill to my guys is that the best place to be is when you're hunted as a team. You don't want to be when you're not hunted. I mean, you don't want to be where you're not relevant. You want it to be when every other team knows you're good and wants to beat you. So we're always going to get everyone's best. So I'm not interested in what other teams do or who they have or if we're playing them at their gym. It doesn't matter. I coach my team. So we execute, we prepare, and we in the lab. We're doing our job so that way. Picture this. The best compliment I got from a reporter was, Coach, watching your team play is watching Mike Tyson before the Buster Douglas fight.
Wow.
And I said, just what you said. I said, wow. And I was on the phone with him.
Major.
And I said, what do you mean by that? He said, when Mike Tyson fought before the Buster Douglas fight, the reporters, the fighters, the trainers, the fans, HBO, everybody knew he was coming in that ring in bad intentions. And that's how we play. We play with bad intentions. So I don't understand the word flat. I don't understand the word not prepared to play. We are deep. So the guys who come off our bench are all-stars, made the all-star team. So that's
See,
how
Coach, that, we feel yeah, you because it sounds like you're describing this show. You know, we do this show with bad intentions. You know what I mean? We got to come together, and yeah, I understand that. I definitely know,
Coach. Yeah, Coach, got me pumped up. I'm ready to run some laps now, Coach. You got me all, you know, got me pumped up.
Come on, I need you. I need you.
Let's go.
So that's the thought process, fellas. So what we do is we just there are some very talented teams, players, owners, and coaches in this league. I mean, we've grown now to 16 teams, from as far up as upstate New York to further, southern Virginia. And so it's very competitive. There's a lot of parity in the league. So we know that. So I tell my guys, you got to embrace that challenge. You got to understand that there's going to be some teams that may want to avoid you because you're talented, but some teams won't come after you. You better welcome that. And you're going to get everyone's. So if you don't match their passion, come on. So our guys, I feel very confident that when we walk out there, you get some teams that talk a little trash and try to get you going. I say everybody got a game plan until the horn blows. And when the horn blows, all right, lights come on, a lot of layup line All-Americans. I want to know what you're like when the horn blows. So I trust my guys. Horn blows, we get nasty.
Coach, we've had some experiences. I think Akil and I personally with some of your players, and I can attest to the fact that you have a lot of talent on that team. But before we let you go and get you out of here, tell our audience everything they need to know about the Beltway Bombers, where they can catch a game, when the first game is, when the home opener is, the website address, the social media pages, everything they need. Do your commercial, please.
Thank you. Okay, well, our website is www.beltwaybombersbasketball.com. So there's an update of our players, our roster, our schedule on there. We have a 16-game schedule. The league has it so that we have 10 home games out of the 16. As it is today, it may be fluid, it may change a bit, but as it stands today, our home venue is going to be Riverdale Baptist School on Largo Road in Upper Marlboro, Maryland. We open up next Saturday on the road in New York City against a new team in the league called the Tri-State Energy. Our first home game is Saturday, November 17th against the Winchester Storm. So we're going to have our celebration of our championship before then, and then we're going to get after it. And then we wind it down towards the end of March, and hopefully in preparation of another Final Four and a back-to-back chip. And our mindset is not to repeat. Our mindset is to go get another chip because it's a different journey. So if you go to the website, it kind of lets us know about all the details on it. If you go to Chaz Dudley on Facebook, there's a lot of updates about the team. If you go to the Bomb Squad Dancers, there's a lot of update about the dancers and different causes and what they're trying to do. So BeltwayBombersBasketball.com is the website. Home opener is November 17th at Riverdale Baptist. And if you go to the website, if there's any changes into the venue, that will be on there as well, guys.
Coach, again, we just want to thank you for coming on and, talking about what it is you do. It's so important in the community and also giving guys an opportunity to continue to, chase their dreams. So thanks for your time, Coach. We really do appreciate it. We look forward to having you back again sometime.
Yeah, you're always. Game 5 new fan. So we'll be talking to you about, getting out to some of the games and promoting.
You got it. My compliments on your guys' success. I'll be listening, and thank you for your time tonight, man.
All right. Thank you, Coach.
Thank you, Coach.
Take care, man. All right.
Chaz Dudley, Coach, GM, and CEO of the Beltway Bombers, originally from the Bronx, New York. Just like a New York-themed show tonight.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah, what's wrong with that? That's corny. All right, well, we can just jump right in some hot topics before we get our next guest on the line. But the hot topics are brought to you by Audible. Is your schedule too hectic to read as much as you want? I know mine is. Well, try audiobooks and kick back and let someone else do the reading for you. All you got to do is visit Audible and sign up for your free trial at audibletrial.com/warroomsports. In no time, you could be listening to the latest bestsellers, hands-free, stress-free, while getting other things done at the very same time. World Series started last night. I did a little bragging on Facebook to you fellas because, I was listening to the MLB opening day show and I realized that I picked the Giants and the Tigers to go to the World Series, but I did pick the Tigers to win and they got mopped up last night. Did you guys see that? Like, Pablo Sandoval went crazy with three home runs in game one. He only had 12. Yeah, he only had 12 home runs the entire season. Y'all think, what's up with Pablo? Kung Fu Panda on that stuff?
Maybe he stopped by and talked to Barry Bonds before the game.
Yeah, after the playoffs. I mean,
yeah,
it
was a combination of things, I believe. Number one, the Tigers pitching staff, I think, was it Verlander pitching for them?
Yeah, Verlander.
Absolutely.
Best pitcher in the game.
It was the Clydesdale.
Yeah, he was
Clydesdale.
The feminine horse. and his manager even came out to the mound and asked him, like, what are you doing? what's going on with you? So there was that. And then, you know, sometimes you just have one of those crowning and defining moments in your life. And I think that's what it was for the Panda Bear.
For Pablo.
I think it's funny. I was talking to Brandon on sports. We were talking earlier about this. And we both agreed. I think it's one of the things where Detroit was sitting around. You know, San Fran just finished playing like 24 hours ago.
They were sitting around for like a week.
They just finished playing the Cardinals like 10 minutes before the World Series started. So, you know, they didn't have time to sit around and get cold. And in baseball, you know, it's one of those things. If you're hot, it doesn't matter who's pitching to you. You know what I mean?
That's a really good point because, you know, we know about the baseball season, 162 games. So they're playing damn near every day. So if you're in that type of groove and then you stop playing for almost a week, it's pretty easy to get shelled that way. Personally, I still have Detroit winning it in six. The only bad thing about it is like, you know, you don't want to waste Verlander starts. You know, you don't expect him to lose. So it should get interesting from this point out. I mean, Scherzer, their number two, is a number one anywhere else in the league. So, you know, maybe he can get one. I mean, and plus they're in San Francisco right now. So San Francisco, so far, all they've really done was hold serve.
Hey, Leroy, I know Leroy's out there. He's a baseball head. I wonder what his opinion is of this series. But, you know, I think that it's going to be a good series. So I'm looking forward to seeing if they can stretch out the 6 or 7 games.
Yeah,
I love game sevens in baseball. So,
yeah, man, tension. Like there were people on our social networks the other day, kind of dissing baseball. And when game seven happened in the last series, they were saying how baseball was so boring and stuff. I'm like, man, I don't know what you're watching. Like, I don't think there is a better game seven situation in any sport. I mean, game seven turned out to be some trash, but you know.
Use me as an example and a case study for most of a certain segment of society, said segment of our listeners. I didn't know what baseball was, and so in learning, you know, kind of learning what it was, then it becomes that much more interesting. And so as you learn the game, then it becomes more interesting and more entertaining for you. So someone whose folks don't understand it, I believe.
Game seven in basketball is also, depending upon if it's a close game or not, that can also be, like, you know, excruciating.
Oh, no, yeah. I mean, anything if it's a close game. I mean, because we get hyped for game sevens in baseball, and then that game ended up being terrible. But, you know,
just
going off from the past, you know.
I guess it's different too,
really,
because baseball is like when you get to a game seven in baseball, every pitch matters, and it's like you're on the edge of your seat.
The strategy of the game is different because it's like an all hands on deck situation. So you know, we're talking about like a Verlander. Even if he's not pitching the game, you kind of want to line it up to where your ace would end up getting that game, but a lot of times that doesn't happen. But you know. He's available night because it's all hands on deck. Like,
now
Verlander might mess
it, like,
around and be your closer that night.
You know what? The bottom line is, in all sports, like in the championship, the defining moments are always like that. I'm sitting here thinking about it, watching the Giants win their couple Super Bowls. Like, those were, like, excruciating, too, and I don't even like the Giants.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of different in basketball, though, because it's not an all hands on deck situation. Royal Ivy's not getting in game seven. You know what I mean? But in baseball, like, you're going to use as many guys as you can use, you know. You're going to do stuff that you don't usually do. But we'll see what goes on. Real quick, fellas, before we move on, Kill, who you got winning the series? How many games?
I have I got the Tigers winning and the Tigers winning in six.
PJ.
I got the Giants in six.
Austin. All right.
Yeah. Okay.
Jimmy.
I'm gonna say the Giants in six just because I don't want Dev to be right.
I know, because I'm gonna brag some more, because I'm not used to being right. So when I'm right, I'm gonna act like I'm always right.
Giants.
Okay, got you. Giants. Well, y'all know last week we had on MMA fighter Kyle Sefcik. He talked to us before his last ever. Supposedly, you know how fighters go. You know, you get that itch at any point. But this is supposed to be his last pro MMA fight. He was going to concentrate on training. War Room Sports was in attendance at Shogun Fight 7 at the First Mariner Arena in Baltimore this past Saturday. And we definitely want to give a shout-out to Shogun's director, John Rollo, for a very nice event. You fellas want to say anything about the event and Kyle's fight real quick?
I just want to say it was a great event. I've been to a lot of MMA events, regional, the big boys, UFC, or what have you, but they definitely have something there because, as indicated by the name, this was Shogun 7. So this is their seventh card they put together. And the DMV has a huge community. Yeah, they have a huge community of MMA. I didn't realize there was that many gyms and that many fighters in the area. But they have a nice MMA community. And, you know, it's only going to grow from here. The fights were exciting. Saw a lot of knockouts. We saw somebody get knocked out in 23 seconds. We saw some submissions. It was all kinds of craziness, but you know how MMA matches are. Definitely good, though.
Well, we didn't even give him Kyle's results. He had a very competitive fight. What did it go, late in the second, or did they get to the third in that, Jimmy?
Second.
It was late in the seventh. The second.
What's the third round?
I don't know. It went a while. I know these rounds are too damn long in the first place.
It went to the second.
Well, what happened was the fight was very competitive.
Yes.
You know, Kyle's opponent was a very good fighter, but there was just a moment where Kyle caught him slipping, got him in a guillotine choke, and made the guy tap out. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Basically, The ref kept the entire fight. It was kind of crazy. Kyle came out, like, I don't know what. He was trying to, like, push the action. He was trying Superman punches, and he was going for the karate kick.
Yeah.
I was like, this is my last fight.
I'm going out. I'm trying all the moves that I practice. Because a lot of these dudes practice moves, and then they just get in the ring and just rumble, just street fight.
Yo, when I say Kyle, he was trying, like video game moves. Kyle was trying video game moves, and then what happened was the fight went to the ground. Actually, the guy had the upper hand. It went three rounds.
Kyle tried to high-yuga dude a couple times.
Yeah, it went three rounds.
The guy
had the upper hand in the first two rounds. The fight was on the ground. The guy had the upper hand in terms of the ground game. But in the third round, like any MMA match, you can court any time. Kyle caught him in the guillotine choke. And dude ain't won no parts of it. He tapped out.
That was
cool.
All
he
she
must
wrote.
Have locked it in real tight. Yeah, so definitely was a great fight. Made him tap right out, but it was kind of crazy.
Yeah. All right. So yeah, go ahead, Austin. Sorry.
I was gonna say I thoroughly enjoyed it. You know, just the heart and bravery that these dudes display. I mean, I'm gonna be honest, man. I can't live my life defending myself with my face. And that's what a lot of these guys do. Like, it's insane. It's really insane the amount of time, the training, and then, you know, to come out. And, you know, it's boxing is very much a violent and brutal sport. But I think I would say MMA is boxing times three. I think it's about three times as violent because you can use so many and appendages. And then there's this level. So a lot of these guys are early in their pro career, and then the main event was two guys that are a little bit more are a little further along in their development, and it showed, man. Lester and Caleb, what was the guy's last name?
Caleb Hall.
Yeah.
Those two dudes were like on another. Mm-hmm. They were on a different planet. They were on a different level.
They were throwing bombs at each other.
That's why they were the main event. But like we said, shout out to John Rollo for an excellent event. I wanted to talk to you guys about something that's been brewing all week before we get our guests on the line. Warren Moon had some comments about the criticism of Cam Newton. And he basically, you know, he pulled the race card saying that he thinks the criticism of Cam is pretty much has racial undertones. And one of the main reasons he said that is because when Cam was doing his sulking after losing and, you know, the way he responded in the press conference, certain people said it was reminiscent of Vince Young. So he's wondering why he has to be compared to another black quarterback rather than somebody like a Jay Cutler.
Warren Leaf.
So Jason Whitlock actually wrote an article entitled
"A Good
Bubble Doesn't Help Black Quarterbacks." And he was basically saying that the black fan base, black people in the media, just black people, period, kind of put these black quarterbacks into a bubble of protection. This kind of goes back to the show that we had a while back, Black Protectionism in Sports. And he thinks this bubble is actually detrimental to these guys, you know, having the great careers that they may have the potential to experience. Because it seems like they're above criticism. Like, if anybody criticizes them, the race card is going to be pulled out. So let's talk about this for a few minutes before we get our guests on the line. What do you guys think, man?
You already know. I'm going to go all the way in, so if somebody else wants to go, sounds like Jimmy.
I'll start it off. I'll just say this is a loaded topic, and we can do an entire show about this. Because to be honest with you, I see both sides of the equation. I think it can be detrimental when you're not allowed to be objective and criticize someone for, you know, their performance. But at the same time, I have heard comments, you know, that rub me the wrong way, so to speak, as an African-American. But then sometimes when I'm critical of an African-American player, you have people who go as far as to say you're Uncle Tom for criticizing someone. So it's one of those things where people on both sides of the fence are wrong. The reality should be somewhere in the middle. But it's like most people fall on one extreme or the other. That's just my personal opinion.
When I initially heard the comment, I heard it not from Warren Moon's mouth, but through some prognosticator on TV. And he said that basically, you know, just the beginning of it, that Warren Moon said that, you know, Cam Newton's criticism was racially, you know, driven, and it's because he's a black quarterback that he receives that type of criticism. So I was like, yo, my first thought was that Warren Moon is bugging. Like, he's tripping. Like, I mean, I understand what he's saying, and there may be some type of extra scrutiny on black quarterbacks. I don't know what angle. I mean, as a whole, I don't feel like it really is that much, but, I mean, I could be wrong. But I just thought that his initial statement of it just being a racially driven, you know, comments coming at Cam Newton, I thought was like he was tripping, because to me, I think anybody is going to get the same type of criticism that Cam Newton got. I hear him about the comparison of the black-to-black quarterbacks and trying to, you know, make a comparison to other black quarterbacks, but I think that's something that we do no matter what. Like, when we were coming up playing basketball, any tall white boy that could shoot but couldn't jump was, compared to Larry Bird.
Nobody ran off like playing the race card on us for doing it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's human.
That's a whole other issue because you really – no, Mom, go ahead, PJ.
I'm pretty much done, but I'm just saying I think it's human nature to do that, and that's probably why you see the comparisons. I don't know that it's so racially driven, like, oh, this is a black quarterback. We got to scrutinize him harder.
Like it or not,
as human beings, we associate based on physical characteristics. So if you're a tall white boy and you can shoot but you can't jump, I'm going to compare you to Larry Bird. It just is what it is. We need to stop being so sensitive. I think there's three levels of issue. Number one, to start with Warren Moon, you got to give him a measure of a rope on this in the sense that understanding where he came from and what his experiences were and the fact,
I agree.
That he is the best black quarterback to ever walk this earth that we know of and what he went through to get to where he is, he has a different perspective that you have to understand. In today's NFL, to get a job, there is no black quarterbacks and black athletes face no more racism in the NFL. You can get a job in the National Football League. Where the challenges come into play is the fact that you have black fans who are protectionists, who do create this bubble, and it's almost like they don't allow these guys to be held to the same standard or to a high standard. And so you hold them to a low standard, they perform to a lower standard, and then the criticism comes, then we kind of tear them down, and then we want to scream that it's racism. I always point back to the fact that there's not a system in place in the U.S. that nurtures the development of African-American quarterbacks. We take athletes and we slam them in the position, and we don't teach them the nuances of the game or the cerebral parts of the game. The casual fan and the casual listener may be insulted by what I'm about to say, but y'all don't understand what an NFL quarterback is, what a signal call. It's far more akin to a grand chess player than it is to a super athlete. So when you have these guys that haven't fought the game and they can get away with that in high school and they can get away with that in college, you can't get away with that in the NFL, not in
the Super Bowl. Even in the NFL, you may be able to get away with it for a season.
You can get away with playing, and
then,
it's going to sell tickets and merchandise, but you're not going to have sustained success.
Let me ask you a question, though. Our master chess players just aren't born that way. They get to be that way through nurturing. And you can see it even on a little league team, or even a high school level, where you see guys that have two quarterbacks. I see it in college all the time where they have multiple quarterbacks playing on the team. They coach them different. We're going to bring him in for this. I mean, even in the league, when the black guy comes in, that's a wildcat. When the black guy comes in, we're running the wildcat. You know what I mean? Like,
No, but y'all kind of this is all true, and y'all getting off on the reasons why, and we'll do that another show. But right now, it's basically, it's about Moon's comments, fan reaction, Whitlock's reaction. I personally think Warren Moon was digging, and I do respect the fact that because he played in a time where he really did go through a lot of this stuff. His perspective
was wrong.
Skewed a
Moon
little
was,
bit.
Moon was
but
wrong.
Cam Newton isn't going through what Warren Moon, with Doug Williams, with Randall Cunningham and guys like that went through. He's not going through that.
Ron McPherson.
But, I take it back to the black fans, and I really do believe in this quote-unquote bubble that Jason Whitlock is talking about because we see it every day in our dealings with the fans. Here's an excerpt from the article, and this will make you think a little bit because I think everything he says right here is 100% true. He said, white QBs don't have to deal with this. In Kansas City, a group of fans paid for a banner to be flown over Arrowhead Stadium that called for owner Clark Hunt to bench Matt Castle. Kansas City's backup quarterback is Brady Quinn, the Cleveland bust. He's not a solution, but he was named the starter on Monday. Now imagine the uproar if the Eagles fans took similar action against turnover machine Michael Vick. There would be riots in the streets. Philly fans would be labeled racist. We didn't even hear about what happened in Kansas City until he pointed it out in his article. But like he said, imagine had that happened in Philly. Imagine if RG3 was playing bad and that happened in Washington.
Right.
Come on.
Listen,
we're a little too sensitive when it comes to this subject.
We are sensitive, but hold on, just to play devil's advocate real quick, it's a reason we're sensitive. Let's not forget, there is a reason that we are sensitive to it, and I'm not a black protectionist at all. And I don't know what Warren Moon is hearing for him to make those statements, but like Austin said, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt because he is Warren Moon. But with that being said, there's a reason that there's a sensitivity there. Sort of like today with this issue of Stephen A. Smith making his comment, if this was a white guy, he'd have been canned immediately. But there's a reason for that. And I'm just playing devil's advocate here. So this is a deep issue that we probably really can't get into now to dig deep into it. But there's a reason.
Well, I'm not
going to
play devil's advocate, and I think everybody's being too sensitive. You know what I'm saying? I'm not going to go pulling the the Martin Luther King card or the slavery card every time a black quarterback is not playing well and he gets criticized just like everybody else. Cutler gets run under the – come on. Cutler gets thrown through the ringer every time he makes a mistake. Tony Romo. I mean, you could just name them. Like, it's just – it's.
Oh no!
It may have been
Tony
a situation where it was definitely like this before and it was like this for a long time, but – every time I speak with somebody, they're telling me, well, if he was white. But that's not true because I can name a bunch of instances where the guy was white and the same type of stuff happened. It's just that everybody's not so sensitive about that. You can keep naming
fact,
them.
No, you're right. You're right about that. The fact of the matter is, like, people are sensitive. Race is never going to be a time where race is not an issue in sports. I've just come to that conclusion.
No doubt.
We are ultra sensitive. I mean, considering our history in the United States of America – we are ultra sensitive. A lot of us are. And, you know, so I see that this is pretty much going to be a running discussion forever. There's never going to be a time in any sport when race is not an issue, whether this is hoops, football. I mean, it just is what it is. It's something that needs to be talked about, though. In situations like this, I actually appreciate because it brings the dialogue out so we can talk about it.
No doubt. I mean,
race,
you know us.
Race seems to be an issue
gonna...
people don't want to talk about.
We're going to probably make this dialogue.
I didn't see where it was that bad, though, with Cam.
Jim,
I didn't see
where
the criticism
day,
that he was – I was just saying I didn't see that the criticism that Cam was getting was that bad. I don't see that it was any worse than, like,
PJ, it was
you
about
see,
his
like,
play.
Cutler.
Yeah,
I mean, because it was about his play, and then –
and
I mean, the main thing was – and then he sulked at the conference.
Yeah,
but, I mean, the stuff that he said at a press conference was kind of – that's not normal to see a quarterback look that defeated – like a team leader to look that defeated and be that kind of, I don't know, his suggestion box.
And if you read between the lines, he threw a couple people under the bus. You know what I'm saying?
He did.
He called the reporter sweetheart.
Yeah, he called her sweetheart. I don't know sweetheart. You know what I'm saying?
Dog, you're like 20 years old.
He McNabb, yes, good point. PJ, the dude has never faced that much adversity. He's not used to losing. So he doesn't know how to respond, and he's got a team full of grown-ass men looking at him, and he has to adjust to it. I think he will. I think he'll adjust. He'll grow up.
But that's the case for a lot of I mean, I don't know. I mean, sometimes you get, like, you get athletes that are like that, that have been great through high school, that were great in college, and then they get to the NBA, and probably because they were so – I mean, NBA, NFL, or any professional sport, because they were so good getting there – that, you know, they go probably to a bad team or a team that's not that good, and they have to deal with that because that's the first time
PJ,
they met those kinds of challenges.
That was actually a good segue, a good Freudian slip because we have our guest on the Digital Extreme Tech Hotline, and he is from the NBA. You guys know him. He played for the Jazz, the Chicago Bulls. I know I'm probably leaving something out, but he's now a member of the New York Knicks. So we definitely want to welcome into the war room for the first time, Ronnie Brewer. What's going on, Ronnie?
Not much. How are y'all?
Pretty good, man. Pretty good.
Pretty good. Good to have you on the show, Ronnie.
Yeah, definitely good to have you on the show. Thanks a lot for calling in. We appreciate it. But we're going to get right into it, you know, because, you know, we're just having a little conversation about the whole black quarterback thing that's been going on this week. So now we're just going to switch gears, you know, because we don't want to get you involved in that. So we know you were born in Portland, grew up in Arkansas, spent a significant portion of your career in places like Utah and Memphis. Of course, you did live in Chicago for a while, but how's your transition to living in, you know, the biggest of big cities, New York? How's that transition gone, and, like, what are the biggest things you had to acclimate yourself to?
Man, it's still an adjustment. Like you said, I lived in Chicago for the past 2 years, and that was a huge adjustment. But, you know, the simple thing about New York City, you know, that there's always people everywhere. I mean, it's not like, you know, any time of the day or night, you never really see, like, emptiness. But that's new to me, but, you know, everybody I've come across, you know, this is a town that supports their sports. So, you know, everybody I've come across really showed me a lot of love, showed the Knicks a lot of love, and, you know, I really appreciated that. So just trying to get used to the traffic, get used to finding my way around New York City. But other than that, man, it's been a smooth transition.
Yeah, I mean, when they say the city that never sleeps, like, that's not a joke. Like, there's always somebody in the streets in New York.
It's always on and popping. Ronnie, what's up? This is B. Austin.
What's going on?
Man, I'm blessed. I can't complain even if I wanted to, brother.
No doubt.
Being that you haven't really gotten an opportunity to play in front of the home fans in the Garden, but just from your interactions with New Yorkers, either through the organization or from being out and about, how has the reception been from the fans and the team? I think you kind of started to touch on that.
Man, the reception's been great. You know, everybody in New York City has said the same thing. I mean, they just want a winning team. No matter how you get it done, they just want to bring the championship back to the city. So, you know, I think everybody on this team is doing everything they possibly can to prepare for the season, you know, get in shape, and contribute any way we possibly can. And, you know, we haven't got to play in the Garden in preseason, but, you know, as a visitor coming to the Garden, you know, it's one of the greatest environments you can play as a basketball player. And, you know, I'm just looking forward to being able to call it home for the entire season. And every team that comes into the Garden, you know, they're going to catch hell because, you know, we got to protect our house and, you know, represent the city. So I think we're going to do it very well.
No doubt.
Ronnie, this is TJ. Back on September 7th, it was announced that you'd be out 6 weeks after you underwent your arthroscopic surgery on your knee. But I believe you made your preseason debut on Monday versus the Sixers in Syracuse. So I guess how's the rehab going? You know what I mean? How's your knee feeling? And do you think that you'll be ready for the season?
My knee's doing very well. You know, it's completely healed. Get my strength back.
Cool.
But the whole thing with that process is, you know, I've been off the court for 6 weeks, not been able to run, jump, shoot, cut. So, you know, the last two preseason games is kind of to try to, you know, get a feel for the game, get my rhythm back, get my conditioning back in my lungs, get my legs back under me. You know, it's definitely a process. You know, you can kind of simulate, you know, running on the treadmill, running in the treadmill in the water, biking. And, you know, the last week I've been able to practice, you can simulate different game-like situations, but you can't simulate the game. So it's a different pace, a different speed. And, you know, I'm just trying to take it one day at a time and get back where I'm 110% and I can help the team out as much as possible. So I made a little bit of improvement last night, and, you know, hopefully next game I can try to improve on that.
Cool.
Okay. Hey, Ronnie, this is Akil, and I'm the only diehard Chicago Bulls fan on the panel. And for the last 2 years, man, I was rooting for you, you know, hard. And I noticed how, you know, since you came to the Bulls, you improved your three-point shooting. So we have some tough playoff losses, though. But the question I have for you, you've carved out a nice reputation in the NBA of being a good, hard-nosed defender. Now, who has been some of your toughest covers, and which one of them has been the toughest cover?
Some of the toughest covers, I would say, you know, Kevin Durant being, you know, he's 6'9", 6'10", and he has, you know, great basketball skills where he can play on the perimeter. He can post up and shoot fadeaways over the top of people, get to the basket and finish with contact. And usually he plays the game the right way, making passes to his teammates, and you know, causes a lot of defense, a lot of havoc. I think Kobe Bryant's up there just because, you know, he knows as his career has progressed, you know, it's like he has gotten better. His legs are not where they were when he was, you know, 21, 22, 23, but he's evolved where he has a post-up game. You know, he can shoot, you know, floaters with either hand, hook shots with either hand, fadeaways over either shoulder, and to get guys involved in the game. Another tight cover is probably LeBron and Dwayne Wade. You know, Dwayne Wade's a great slasher. He can get to the basket, one of the most athletic two guards in the league, and LeBron is just physically gifted where, you know, he's a lot faster, stronger, and can jump higher than a lot of players in the league. So those guys usually cause problems. And the other guy, to me, who's caused you know, for me early in my career, the most problems was Melo, which, you know, I'm happy to be able to call him a teammate now. You know, with his size and quickness, his first step, it's really hard to guard him without having help or a double team. You know, he can score a lot of points in a quick spurt, and he can really change the outcome of the game. So, to me, those guys have been the toughest guys I've had to guard individually, and it really caused me a problem. The most probably has probably been, like, Kobe because, you know, as my rookie year, which was 7 years ago, you know, he still had his legs under him, and he was able to do a lot of things. And I was able to see him progress and get better year after year and add something new to his game. So, and I think LeBron is getting there because, you know, he's starting to post up a little bit more. But those two guys have been pretty tough, and I think Melo's up there too.
Cool. Would there be, like, anybody – I mean, because these – you name, like, the big guns. Like, would there mm-hmm. – would there be anybody out there that surprises people? Like, you know, this dude really gives you trouble, and he's not really a big-name player. Not really.
I think the majority of the people already know about. I don't know. I think Manu gives a lot of guys problems because it's unorthodox game. It's because he's going left majority of the time, and guys used to guarding guys going right. To me, you know, J.R. Smith, whenever he gets it going, it's hard to stop him because he can shoot. He has so much range on his jump shot where he can shoot threes at a high level.
Another teammate, so you're good.
Yeah. I have one for you. When you get, at times, you know, when I was with Utah,
we had to face Denver so many times, and he's had so many breakout games where, you know, he'd hit like six or seven or eight threes and, you know, get a steal and have a highlight dunk that, you know, got the crowd going. So a lot of guys, I don't think, give him a lot of respect that he deserves. And another guy, you know, I respect him because, you know, he's a little older than me, but, you know, I grew up watching him back in Arkansas, and that's Joe Johnson, just because, you know, he's not really like a guy who talks a lot. That's why they call him Cool Joe or Smooth Joe. But, you know, he can post up guys, you know, to shoot the ball at a high level. But, you know, at 6'8", 2, whatever he is, 245, 250, you know, he still can run the 1, the 2, and the 3. And, you know, if you're trying to play small ball, put him at the 4. So he's a matchup problem throughout the league. And, you know, I don't think a lot of people give him as much respect as he deserves. I think the contract kind of magnifies, oh, he might not deserve that much amount of money. But if you look at his body of work, you know, he's had a successful career.
I agree with you. I defend Joe a lot on the same principles. Like he's a very versatile player. Like you said, that contract.
Yeah. If you look at him when he's in Atlanta, I mean, he basically had everything on his shoulders. So when they won because of Joe. They lost, you know, they blamed it to Joe. Which I mean, that comes with the territory of being a superstar. But you know, it warranted him one of the biggest contracts. So. You know, as critics and fans, they expect you to play above and beyond the numbers that you already have, even if your numbers are good. So, you know, I respect him a lot. Just, you know, not only that he's from Arkansas, but, you know, through all the criticism, he continues to, you know, play his game and continue to do what he does.
Yeah, and I'm excited about seeing him in his new situation, too. You know, that's kind of like y'all rivals now. And by the way, this is Jimmy. Ronnie, I have a question. I have a couple questions for you, and they're kind of outside of the realm of basketball. But we hear you're a huge video game guy, so I have a couple questions. Are you an Xbox or PS3 guy?
When I was younger, I used to rock PS3 a lot. But, you know, when I got into the league, a lot of my teammates stopped playing PlayStation. They switched to Xbox. So they converted me to be an Xbox guy, and, you know, that was the end of you know, the whole when Call of Duty first came out and, you know, guys were playing.
That's what I was
going to
ask you. Are you a sports guy or a Call of Duty type player?
Man, I feel like I'm super versatile when I play. no, to be honest with you, like, right now, you know, I've been super busy with, you know, trying to get back in shape and with training camp. And, you know, when I'm home, I'm usually, like, just watching TV, relaxing and, like, icing or whatnot. But, you know, throughout the season, I really pick up, you know, to playing video games, and I play 2K, I play college football. I'm not that great at Madden, I'm not going to lie. All right,
cool.
But,
But
yeah,
I do think I'll be around.
Anytime,
Ronnie, we got some players in the room. So,
Anytime I talk to a professional athlete, I always ask them this question when it comes to video games. Are you one of those guys that like play with yourself and make yourself gun on the game?
To be honest with you, I used to play video games a lot. So we have this whole concept of, you know, if you're playing, you don't get to pick a team. Because if you're a good gamer, you can play with anybody. If it's the Bobcats or if it's the Heat or Lakers or Knicks. So we hit random. Whatever team you get, you got to ride with them. So that's how you play.
I heard that. All right, now my next question, on a more serious note, one of the more admirable things that we've seen about you is your foundation and that you're a charitable guy. So give us a little bit of information about the Ronnie Brewer Foundation. What exactly do you guys do?
No doubt. Well, I started in 2006. And, my rookie year, I saw, during the season, with your respective team, they do a lot of stuff in the community, because basically, the NBA team, football team, whatever it is, they're role models in the community. Where I grew up in Fayetteville, Arkansas, we didn't have a professional team. It was just Arkansas Razorbacks. And to me, everybody looked up to the college players. And, they could only do so much with their time restraints. So I felt like it was my duty to go out there and give back to the community, because basically that was the community that raised me. We decided to start the Ronnie Brewer Foundation. My family's very involved in it. We give out, food for Thanksgiving. We, do cold drives. We do, Christmas present giveaways. Scholarships. We work with the Boys and Girls Club. We do a basketball camp. We're raising money to build a basketball gymnasium in Arkansas. And, my first year, I felt like we were doing so much locally. And, it gave me the idea that, not only can I participate with what the team is doing, but, I could go above and beyond that and do my own thing to help people outside of just what the team was doing. So, every season I try to do more and more in the respective city that I'm in. When I came here, I saw that the New Yorkers were showing me so much love, and I plan on doing the same exact things that I do back in my local city in Fayetteville, Arkansas. I plan on doing the same thing in New York. So to me, a lot of my foundation deals with the children. I feel like the children are our future and our community, helps develop them, and I try to do as much as I possibly can in the community to help these kids out.
Absolutely. Now, Ronnie, we heard that you once climbed the stairs of the Sears Tower in Chicago for the Rehabilitation Institute of Chicago Charity.
Yeah.
That's an amazing feat, I must say. But what in the world inspired you to do something like that?
So check this out. So we're in the NBA lockout, no basketball. I'm in Chicago. I'm like, man, I'm trying to stay in shape as much as I possibly can. So whenever the call comes in that, the lockout's upended, you can go back to work, I'm going to be ready. I'm going to be in shape. So I got a call that they were doing this event for the Rehabilitation Center in Chicago, and they were going to climb the Willis Tower. And I was like, oh, that's not going to be a problem. I'm an athlete. I'm in shape. Good deal. Well, little did I know, it's like the biggest building in Chicago, 100-plus floors. And so I get there, and they're like, okay, every couple floors, you'll have some water. You'll be able to take some pictures, but you really can't stop until you get to the very top. So, the first 20 to 30 flights of stairs was pretty tough. But, as you're walking up the stairs, you see, local firefighters with their equipment on, walking with the elderly or people who have had work, on their ankles, their knees, have prosthetics, different things like that, walking the stairs. So that's motivation in itself. And, they see you as a professional athlete, joining the cause to educate and to raise money, that inspires them, and to me that they inspired myself to go out there and not quit. So, at first I thought it was a huge mistake, but
at the end of the day, it's one of the moments I'll never forget in my life, and I can tell, you know, my kids and my friends and family that I accomplished it, and it was for a good cause.
Man, and when you tell them, you got to take them outside of the Sears Tower and make them look up.
Oh, yeah, man. It's
like, I was just in Chicago,
you can see the tower from about, you know, 15 minutes to 20 minutes outside the city, you know.
Right.
It's one of the first buildings you see, you know, if you're in the suburbs of Chicago. So as I got closer, I was like, man, am I really going to be able to do this? But, again, it was a great experience. It was for a great cause. And even though I was super tired at the end, you know, I was able to take pictures with the participants and, you know, got a little award and get some media and press, which was really cool, and it was for a good cause. So I really enjoyed myself.
Yeah, I've been in there, and I was tired riding the elevator, so that's definitely an admirable feat, man. That's
yeah, no doubt.
Oh, man. Well, what are your predictions for the New York Knicks this season, Ronnie? You have a hand in this. You were part of this.
Yeah.
What are your predictions?
Honestly, you know, if we're healthy, I think we control our own destiny. You know, we like, you know, everybody reports we are one of the oldest teams in the NBA. But, again, we do have a lot of young veteran players who have been in the league for a while, you know. You know, J.R. Smith, Melo, Omari, Tyson, myself, you know, James White, I think, is going to be able to help. You know, I think Chris Copeland has really stepped in and helped us a lot. Raymond Felton is going to be huge for us. But then you got the veterans like Jay Kidd, Pablo, Kurt Thomas, Camby, Shea when he gets back healthy. I think Novak is going to be a huge impact to this team. So there's a lot of guys on this team who can contribute. And if we can stay healthy, you know, and, you know, play defense, rebound, and low turnovers, that's going to allow us to win a lot of games at home and win a lot of games on the road. And, you know, our goal is, you know, to be a top-four seed. And to be a top-four seed, you have to win your division. I think our division is one of the toughest divisions in the league by far. It's going to be tough. It's not going to be easy. But if we do that, you know, we're taking it one step at a time. We win our division. Our prize is going to try to be winning an NBA championship. I think it's something that every team aspires to do. But, you know, after the first month, second month, third month, you know, you see little by little teams dropping out of that goal for the season. And, you know, hopefully when April comes around, that's still one of our goals and something we're trying to work towards too.
All right. That's what's up. Hopefully y'all can knock off the Heat, but I ain't say that.
Yeah.
All right. So before we let you go, Ronnie, I mean, give everybody, you know, your website, your Twitter handle, you know, everything that you need them to know. The Ronnie Brewer Foundation, everything.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can follow me at Ronnie Brewer Jr. at Twitter.com. My, you know, I'm on Facebook. I got RonnieBrewerJr.com. You know, if you send me a message on Facebook, I'll respond. But, you know, I can't really add friends on there, but I have a fan page on there. I respond as much as I possibly can on Twitter. Sometimes it gets overwhelming, but I do try to respond as much as possible to the fans. And, you know, on my website, you can find out anything you want to find out about the charity, what we're doing in the community, what's our next event, and on my Twitter, too, because I update that myself every day. So.
All right, that's cool. I mean, we'll definitely, you know, because we have a big social media presence, so we'll definitely get that information out to everybody.
Keep up the good work with the foundation.
Yeah,
I appreciate it, man. I think one of the things that you know, a lot of athletes, you know, when it comes to media, you know, it's 95% negative media. If it's
right.
Them not getting along with a teammate, not getting along with a coach, bad performance, off the field antics. But it's, to me, it's that 5% that, you know, you find athletes that are willing to go the extra mile and help and do positive things for their community, their city, and, you know, the things that they're involved in. So that's one of the things that you know, I'm happy to say that I'm willing to do because I want to do it, not that somebody's making me do it.
that, you know, it's something that I take pride in and I was willing to do, you know, from here on.
Absolutely. Keep it up, man. Keep it up. We appreciate it.
No doubt. You know, once the season gets going, you know, we love to have you back on so we can check the progress of the New York Knicks and the NBA season in general. So thanks for joining us tonight in the War Room, Ronnie. We really appreciate it, man.
No doubt.
Thanks,
I appreciate
homie.
Y'all having me.
Ronnie,
all right,
always welcome.
Welcome to the season.
Always welcome.
I appreciate it.
Peace. All right, that was Ronnie Brewer, everybody, shooting guard for the New York Knicks. Yeah,
yes,
I mean,
sir.
Brother did some. He do some nice stuff in the community with his foundation and all that kind of stuff. Brad, you want to, Austin, you want to tell everybody real quick how they can get in touch with us, and so
Jimmy
can take us into this basketball.
Ladies and gentlemen, low life listeners, loved ones, friends, family, check out our website at warroomsports.com to call in and speak with us about any of today's topics. Dial the Digital Extreme Technologies hotline at 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted, and we will most likely pick up the phone in our lovely Beverly Hills studio and invite you in to discuss things with brothers in the War Room Sports. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk.
That's right. Jumping right into this basketball talk. And Basketball Talk is brought to you by Stitcher Smart Radio. You can now hear our show, The War Room, on Stitcher Smart Radio. Just go to Stitcher.com/The War Room. That's one word. And when they ask for the coupon code, enter The War Room. So you put into a contest to win some money. And you can hear Stitcher on your computer, your iPhone, Android phone. And for those still holding on to BlackBerry or Palm phones, you can actually hear us there as well, you know. But anyway, let's jump right into this basketball talk. You know, we only have but you know, maybe about 30 minutes left, but let's keep it real. Let's keep it real when we talk about basketball. There's a number of contenders out there. It's not like if we keep it real, it's not like everyone has a chance. We know going into the season there are a handful of teams that will be, you know, the elite team, so to speak. So let's talk about the Western Conference first, and let's throw out those who we believe will be the elite teams. You know, I'll start and give you the OKC, of course, the Lakers, of course, the Clippers, the Spurs. Minnesota's an up-and-coming team. Does anybody have any crazy predictions of anything that they see in terms of teams coming up on the rise?
I see the Nuggets kind of giving people a scare. Like, they may surprise somebody, make it into the second round, or, you know, push somebody to 7 games in the first round like they did the Lakers. Especially with the addition of Iguodala, who can take more of a subsidiary role in the team and just run up and down and, you know, get a lot of easy baskets with Ty Lawson and also with JaVale McGee. So, you know, teams you said along with Denver.
Yeah, we got in the chat room, bro, Leroy says he likes the Mavericks. I don't know if he's, you know, being a homer. Hold on real quick, though. We have a call in our Digital Extreme Technologies chat line. We're going to bring him on. Oh, this is my homie right here, Uncle Mike Bliss. What's going on, homie?
What's going on, Jim? You know I got to show you some love.
Absolutely. I appreciate it, too, man. I definitely appreciate that. What's going on? What you think about this basketball season coming up?
Well, of course, my boy's just getting old. You know, I'm a Celtics fan till death, okay? And that's why I was a little upset at Corey because he didn't say that Paul Pierce was one of his hardest.
Oh, yeah, he didn't name P-Double.
Let me ask you a question, though, because, you know, it's funny you say you're a Celtics fan because in terms of the Celtics, I'm, like, waiting every year for them to get old, but they don't seem to get old. Like, do you think this is the year or you think you still got a little left?
They actually got a little younger.
They got younger.
Yeah, we did. We definitely did. Honestly, I know we're a little ways away. We ain't going to go to the chipping number. We're going to give somebody a tough run. But I ain't going to hold you. I'm liking how the Sixers is looking early. Not because I live here, but they look nice. They looking all right. They balling without Bynum. So when Bynum get in and he able to add that extra 19 points, I mean, who knows?
Yeah. Now, we got you on the record, though. What's your prediction for the end of the season? We're going to put you on the record right now.
You mean as far as my boys go, or just who going to win
not,
it all?
No, not your boys. If you're just being objective, forget the fact that you're a Celtics fan. Who you have coming out the West and who you have coming out the East?
Coming out the West, of course, I'm going to go with the Thunder.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I just don't think that the Lakers, not that they're not going to be phenomenal, which they are, but I don't think that they're going to gel this year. I think it's going to take a little bit, you know. And coming out the East, of course, everybody is going to look at Miami. I think they're going to come back out. I do. I think they're going to come back out. It's going to be tough if D-Rose can stay healthy. You know, I'm sure the Sixers is going to give a nice run in the playoffs, but ultimately, you know, with the
so
money, with the money brings
in. You have a rematch of last year. Rematch of last year. Will it be any different in the finals, or you think the Heat will take it again, or you think OKC will?
Yeah, the Heat going to win it. The Heat
all right, that's what's
it.
Up.
I
Uncle
hate to
Mike,
say
man,
that,
I appreciate the support, man. Thanks for the call. We about to got a couple minutes left. We're going to give our predictions, but thanks for the support, homie.
Oh yeah, you know what it is. Just give me the times y'all on all the time because I'm gonna call
no
on a regular.
I'm gonna hit you up on a regular. Got you. I hit you up on Twitter, homie. Thanks.
No problem, man. Have a good night, man.
All right, take it easy.
All right, peace.
Yeah. So Kill said Denver, but Kill, what do you think about the Mavericks this year?
I think the Mavericks will find a way to win 50 games as usual. My thing with Chris Kaman, he's a good center. But he rarely gives you more than 41 games, and he's even hurt already. But now they don't have Dirk, so I guess they expect a lot out of O.J. Mayo, Sean Marion, and Darren Collison. But, I mean, I trust Carlisle and his coaching strategies more so than everybody else. So they'll win 50 games and be out in the first or second round.
Anybody else have any surprises on West? TJ, what you think about the Western Conference this season?
I don't see too many surprises, man. I agree with Kill on Dallas because I don't think that if they do make the playoffs this year, I don't see them. I think they'll be ousted in the first round. Denver will be interesting to see how everybody gels and what Iggy brings to the team. But I think it's the usual suspects in the West for me in terms of teams that are really going to make a difference and that you don't have to watch. I don't see any surprises. And it's unfortunate when I look at the NBA, I feel like As you continue to super team, I think that all these like preseason predictions are going to be real simple. It's going to always come down to like three teams in each conference.
I'll tell y'all at the playoffs.
is LaMarcus Aldridge healthy?
He's healthy
for Portland.
Yeah,
I don't know. I think so.
Yeah, he's
healthy.
All right. Well, let me ask you guys another question. Let's put up in our chat room because this team seems to be around here every year, but nobody brings them up. What do you guys think about the Spurs?
I think they'll be right back there.
It's the same rap sheet.
We're gonna be 50 games in. The Spurs are gonna be leading that division, top 2 seed in the West at the point, and we're gonna be like, damn, how do they keep winning? Like, same story.
Yeah,
like Hill said, BJ.
Yo, all right. We got a question from the chat room. It says they were so close last year, we're stopping them. And to me, if I will answer that real fast, I think they need another big. They need someone to take some of the pressure off of Duncan.
They got Splitter.
At this point, that's exactly my point. That's my point. Thanks for making my point.
Therein lies the problem.
Exactly. If they get one big, and I'm not saying they need a star player, but someone just to take some of the pressure off Duncan, even on the grabbing boards on the defensive end, I think, you know, they'll be better off
dude.
In terms of the playoffs. Because you never think about it this way.
Kind of cracked under the pressure. I think they balled very well during the regular season. Well coached, obviously, by the best coach currently active in the league. And when the brightest of lights on the biggest of stages, by Leonard, he kind of wilted a little bit, as did Danny Green. But I think that was a valuable experience. I kind of put those two guys in the same cluster as I would with the OKC Thunder, almost their entire team except for Fisher. It's kind of like they're young. They're gaining that experience. So who knows what that leads them to contributing this season.
I still think they need a big because if you look at the way they got outboarded, they got killed so bad on the board. And when you look at the other two top teams, whether that be
they got my
OKC
man with no
knees. That's exactly the point. Like, he can't give you but so many minutes. You know what I mean? Like, the Lakers now are coming with Gasol and Bynum, and then you got OKC with Perkins and Serge Ibaka.
You mean Gasol and Iron Man.
Gasol and Howard. My fault, but you know what I mean.
Gasol and Howard.
I'm so used to saying Gasol and Bynum.
They're a twin tower team.
What I'm saying is teams that. As much as I talked earlier about the game evolving, it's like teams are stacking up big men.
Hey, Jimmy, I don't know if he's going to make the team, but, you know, they got Eddie Curry on the roster. I mean,
yeah,
who else you need?
That's the one, and not because, again, I'm not saying the same way Uncle Mike just said, not because I'm in Philly, but that's the thing with the Sixers. We don't know what kind of buy-in that you'll get, and we'll talk about this when we get to the East, but having a big man in this league, it just changes things. And it doesn't have to necessarily be a guy that's, like, skilled. Like, Perkins, for as much as we kill him, he's a big body that plays defense. The Spurs, in my opinion, that's what they're missing.
You keep bringing him up!
For one, because it pisses you off. For two, you know, just making my point.
That doesn't
get
me angry. His game gets himself angry.
Listen to you, brother.
I mean, but as far as the Spurs concerned, I mean, Thiago Splitter is not a bum. But I do see what Jimmy's saying, because I'm looking at their roster now, and they definitely need a big man. Because DeJuan Blair, for as much fanfare he was getting because, you know, he was balling out with no knees, his minutes went down, you know, significantly last year, especially in the playoffs. So, you know, he's not the type of dude that you can depend on in the type of situation that Jimmy's talking about. Like, Tim Duncan needs some real help. You know what I mean?
Tiago Splitter will be a good third big guy. And often it's so upset when you bring up Perkins. But anyway, in terms of the West, it's sort of like the usual suspects you guys saying. PJ and Akil said that Denver, you know, may have a shot. Anybody else? You brought up Portland. What about Utah?
What about them?
I'm just saying, do you think they'll improve this year? I mean, I'm looking at the up-and-coming team.
Al Jefferson is going to put up big numbers, and they're still going to be a mediocre.
And then he's going to go lay in his big-ass bed.
And he's going to go lay in his big-ass bed.
Okay, what about one team nobody's talking about? The other team in L.A.?
The Clippers?
I see somebody in our chat room is saying not to sleep on the Clippers.
You know the problem with that? It's like, just when they got better, you know, and they've gotten good. I'll even give them they've gotten good. LA goes out and gets arguably two top 20 players to pair with the second best two guard of all time. So, what? I mean, LA has gotten that much better than them. So the city, you know, the battle for LA is pretty much over.
Yeah, I mean, I could pretty much say that the Clippers will be one of the teams that's in the mix as far as, you know, playoff seeding, and they may be closer to the top of that mix. But, you know, if the Lakers stay healthy, then, you know, the Clippers don't even have a shot at being called the best team in their city. So.
But my thing is, where are they going to get these minutes for all these guys at? I mean, they already got Caron Butler. They picked up Grant Hill at the three. They got Lamar Odom they're trying to get minutes for. Like, where are they going to find time to play these guys?
The last time we saw Lamar Odom, he looked like he was a little pudgy and he had a mental problem. So you don't know what you're going to get from him. Grant Hill, God bless him for still being
he's hurt now.
By some as being
yeah,
one
he
of
hurt
the
now.
Perimeter
he's
defenders.
Hurt.
But he's hurt,
Grant's hurt now.
And
he's 47. Yeah. What's the average of 41 and 47? That's his age.
44. He's 44, even though we know he's not really 44. In the war room, he's 44. So they still have Chauncey, but Chauncey, you get Jamal Crawford and Jamal
Come
Crawford.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
It's a great thing.
Jamal Crawford will get those minutes. So a lot of we're thinking about their past reputations and not maybe where they are for the 2012-2013.
Here's the thing, though. I saw Lamar Odom in the preseason. Lamar Odom is 450 pounds. I don't know.
He doesn't even look right.
Damn gummy bears, man.
He got, like, skinny arms in the big midsection. It don't even look right.
Yo, he got his Weeble Wobble on? Oh, no. That's that Kardashian booty, yo. That's that.
Annie about to get a divorce, and the refrigerator's going to get half of that 67 million.
Yo,
Grimmie's going to be
Let's cut to the chase. Let's cut to the chase. Forget the divisions and all that, because we're going to jump into the East real quick. Who you have coming out the West? And I'll go around the table. Be Austin.
The division's easy as hell in the West.
Lakers.
Name them.
I'm just going right to the chip, Dev. Who you got, Dev?
What, coming out of the West?
Yeah.
Oh, the Lakers.
Okay, so we got two Lakers. Kill.
I would like to see the Lakers, see Kobe get there, but I got OKC because of Steve Nash's defense.
He's going to let that go, yo.
Put it all on Steve Nash.
So Steve Nash, lateral movement.
The whole season.
So Kill, you got OKC?
OKC.
Yeah, OKC. The Lakers are going to be the number one seed, though. The Lakers are going to be number one seed. The OKC going to win.
So we got two Lakers. PJ, what you say?
Like Jadakiss once said, I might be in OKC. I got the Thunder with me.
Okay. So we got two Lakers. I'm going to pick the Lakers just because of Dwight Howard, because it's just funny. People forget how good he is because of how he handled all that nonsense. Because he act like a doofus, people forget how, like, he's arguably the second and third best player in the game. So with that being said,
he's not the best back-to-the-basket center, though.
So what? Nobody plays with a back-to-the-basket. This ain't 86 people.
I'm joking.
Oh, okay.
I mean, not.
I got you. Let's jump into the Eastern Conference, and I'm going to open the floor up and ask you guys.
There's Jimmy Homie now.
I know Jimmy's about to rumble for it.
Two months ago,
Jimmy was about to rumble him. Now he's about to rumble him.
Hold up.
Jimmy says, so what?
Yo, you remember the old Rough Rider CD? Yo, but that's my man. DMX, yo, but that's my man. Yo,
yeah.
Who are the surprises in the Eastern Conference?
Surprises?
Sixers.
Yo, the Sixers are 6-1 in the preseason.
I mean, because they're the only team going hard in the preseason. Watch them games.
Miami played the Wizard last night, and they stopped playing after, like, halfway through the third quarter.
Nick Young thinks that you can get to the All-Star game from the preseason.
You think this counts?
Yo, Nick Young can shoot the ball without touching it with his hand.
from reports, though, I hear that Doug Collins actually likes him, so he's going to have a green light, you know, in Philly. So
I saw Nick Young pass the ball a couple times in the preseason. I was like, yo, this is not the Nick Young I know.
Yeah,
that was just because it's the preseason. He'll get back to his old way.
Okay.
Nick Young is old school.
I don't have a problem with Nick
Young.
Of
Gilbert Arenas. He carried on the spirit of Gilbert Arenas.
I don't have a problem with Nick Young. Come off the bench and do what you do, you know?
I like Nick.
Hey, Miami, Indiana, Brooklyn, I think those will be the guys in the East that'll do well. And I think the Bulls, they can mess around and win that division. That division sucks. I mean, with Cleveland, Detroit, Indiana, Milwaukee, I mean, Indiana should win it, but don't be surprised if the Bulls win that division without Rose.
They're not winning that with the Pacers.
I'm looking at everything right now, and, you know, sometimes people just say things because they're a part of it, but I think Ronnie Brewer was, like, spot on, like, what division in the league is going to be tougher, because you have four teams that could potentially win that game. I'm going to not be a homer, and I'm going to say three, because I don't really think the Sixers can win the Atlantic Division. But the Knicks, Celtics, or Brooklyn, I mean, we got to see what Brooklyn's going to look like when they actually get on the court in a real game and gel, if they're going to gel. I think that whole thing depends on Lopez. You know, if he can give them a legitimate post presence, you know, they have what it takes on the perimeter. There's no doubt about that. But in the Atlantic, you know, three teams can win that division. And most likely they're going to get four teams in the playoffs.
I agree. I think all four will make the playoffs, definitely.
Yeah. But in my opinion, every other division in the league has clear-cut winners, except for maybe the Central, because I got Indiana winning it, but I don't disagree with Kill that the Bulls could still win that. But besides those two, I think they're clear-cut division winners in every other division in the league.
Yeah.
Pete Jizzle, what's your opinion on the East, Pete Jizzle?
A lot of the points already made, man. I think the strongest team in the East right now is still Miami. But I honestly, like looking at the Atlantic Division, that's an interesting point that Dev and Ronnie Brewer made. Because for real, I mean, when you exclude Toronto, it's interesting because any of those, you know, those teams could be, you know, formidable. I'm just, getting put my Homer hat on, I'm just curious to see how much health we're going to get out of Andrew Bynum. Because I'm
already
to sit down
probably
again,
already
going to
miss
yeah.
the opener.
Yeah, it is fro, I know. But yeah, I'm interested to see, man, if we could get like 60 games out of him. You know what I'm saying? I don't know.
Yeah.
But anyways, to answer
your
question, I think Miami is quite strong.
Wishful
thinking right there.
I'm gonna
say something right now. I'm going on a record, yo. I think Miami might win 65 to 70 games this year. And it's funny because we talk about these other teams. You know, I think the Heat, now that they won the championship, like they still have pressure, but not as much. I think D-Wade is going to be healthier now. I think LeBron is going to have pressure off of him, and I think a monster has been created. I think
to be honest with you, Jimmy, I think you said one thing that's wrong. I don't think there's any pressure on them now that they won the chip.
None at
all.
I mean, you still got to win two, not three, not four, not five, not two. But I just think that there's going to be less venom from the fans.
There were so many people who didn't want them to win, period. I think you're right. I think a lot of people just gave up on that dream.
I just think that LeBron is going to play better than we've ever seen him play. I think a monster has been created. Whether you like love him or hate him, or he falls somewhere in between, I think LeBron is going to play out of his mind and do things we've never seen him do before. I think the Heat may win 65 to 70 games. That's just my personal opinion. And
that's another thing I don't disagree with. But I'm like the house party line. And, you know, that ain't hard to be up in here. Like the league is terrible from, you know. Not from top to bottom, you know, the top of the league is tough, but, you know, once you get past in the East, they're going to have 4 or 5 teams to contend with. You know, in the West,
yeah.
Lakers might run away with that, well, or OKC,
yeah.
But this is the great thing about basketball, man.
The thing is, you never know what's going to happen. I mean, at the end of the day, you have injuries, you have people that come out of nowhere. But with
Jimmy.
That being said, yes, sir.
Oh, Jimmy. I have a point. Like, I think the NBA TV, the NBA package, they should give all their subscribers of $180 a year, they should give them back $30 simply because Indiana, Chicago, Milwaukee, Cleveland, and Detroit will be playing very bad, uninspired, unwatchable basketball. So they should give their owners a refund.
Why are you saying that about the Pacers, though? The Pacers don't suck, man.
Yo, that,
they
that
ain't as good as you giving them credit for, though.
It's
going to be hard to watch.
I just want to put on the record, gentlemen, that if the Heat don't do it, like I'm rooting for my man Ronnie Brewer because I'm now a Ronnie Brewer protectionist because he came on our show and that's not a homie. So now that Ronnie Brewer is the homie, you know what I'm saying? You know,
best defender in the league.
What it is.
Yo,
sorry to know we got a couple of callers on the line. We're not going to be able to get to you this week because we're about to sign off. Whatever you can leave your comment on our Facebook page or our Twitter page. And we'll get a dialogue started there. All right,
absolutely.
My bad. You want to do the picks real quick?
That's all I want to say, man. It's time. I mean, in terms of the – we can give our finals picks next week. We already said we got –
Easy,
got,
man.
Everybody got the Heat.
Miami.
The Heat. Am I wrong?
I got
Miami versus
the
L.A.
Okay.
So L.A. in seven games. L.A. in seven games over Miami.
Anyway, man, let's get out of here, man. Thanks for joining us again in the war room. Shout out to everybody who chimed in, chat room, Facebook, Twitter, even the people sending me text messages, all the callers. Thanks to Chaz, Coach Chaz Deli, the Beltway Bombers, for joining us, and special thanks to Ronnie Brewer of the New York Knicks for coming on as well. Tune in next week, same time, same place, for another great episode of your favorite show. We'll be talking with Tia Northley, the first and only African-American female driver in NASCAR. She's making history, and so are we, so, you know, we decided to link up. And you don't want to miss this show. Until then, try to cope with the void in your life until we're back next week. Catch us online, Facebook, War Room Sports, Twitter, War Room Sports, Instagram, War Room Sports. Find us anywhere, man. We just War Room Sports.
Interest.
Peace.
Now everybody serenades the new face of Kendrick Lamar. This is King Kendrick Lamar, King Kendrick, and I meant it, my point intended is raw. Fix your lenses, forensics, would've told you Kendrick had killed it. Pretend it's a massacre, and the mass is upon her. And I mastered being the master at dodging your honor. In the chapter that read at 25, I would live dormant like 5 in the morning. The rain is spot while Kendrick's performing. And if they dig everything, no, I got
Compton, Compton. Ain't no city quite like mine.
Ain't Trey, what's happening with it, my nigga?
Still I'm at it, peel the plastic off it, you can feel the magic. Still I'm laughing at the critics talking, I can see them gagging. When I'm back in the back of my city, back in the back with a batch and I'm banging Trey beats with me. Look where I'm at, it's a murder cap and I'm capping at birth in this case to rap. It's a rap when I'm done and I come a long way from $100 a month to $100 million in a day. Bitch, I'm from
Compton, Compton.
So come and visit the tire screeching ambulance policeman. Won't you spend a weekend on Rosecrans, nigga? Khaki creasing, crime increasing on Rosecrans, nigga. Kendrick Coleman, nigga. Where you swore that? Hand on the cross and swore that. I do it biggest refusal for the shooters. Karma Sutra scream, fuck your position and make you own that. I'm trying to stay grounded like faux flats, but I know flats and power who crypt that.
I swarm on me like a beehive, hop in the G ride from the west to the east. I know just how Compton rolls.
And that's a given. I pass the blunt and pass the torch, of course it's my decision. I crash the force and you report that you see me in Benzes. I must report that we import the narcotics. You bought it, and talked about it when crack hits the speakers, the music business. I blow up every time we throw up a record. Depending on what you expected, I'm sure it's bigger than your religion. Perfected by niggas that manifested music to live in.
Compton, Compton. Ain't no city quite like mine.
So tell that gangster throw his head high. Roll it up in a blunt, I'ma take you on that next high. I did exactly what I wanted, that's what made them checks fly. In my direction, you never question when I said I would be a mogul before I visit Tupac and Left Eye. Easy and Aaliyah, when I see you, we gon' test drive. Lambo in heaven, but for now I'm on a red eye. Flying back to my city, cause I'll forever stand by.
Compton, Compton. Ain't no city quite like mine.
Now we can all celebrate. We can all harvest the rap artists of NWA. America target our rap market is controversy and hate. Harsh realities we in, made our music translate to the coke dealers, the hood rich, and the broke niggas that play. With them gorillas that know killers that know where you stay. Roll that kush, crack that case, 10 bottles of rose. This was brought to you by Trey. Now every motherfucker in here say,
look who's responsible for taking communism, as you know, I'll make him holler.
Hey yo, Just Blaze, good looking, homie.
Just Blaze?
Just Blaze?
War Room Sports, www.warroomsports.com. What? Ain't no more to it.